Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate. Now listen to this. I'll tell you about the heartache. I'll tell you about the heartache and the loss of God. I'll tell you about the hopeless night, the meager food, the soul forgot. I'll tell you about the maiden with wrought iron soul.
They're yelling loo, not boo.
The walls are not cardboard. Newspapers on the screen as far as we can get the two sides of it. He's got no public assistance. He will load up on your knees. Hard to run. Those things keep you on the balance. There's your dream to be a builder. You're living with him, mate. But by the same chance, he's gone to the boulevard.
Culture Vulture, the number to call to interrupt my train of thought, as always, is 646-478-4847. Shock me with your dialing fingers. We are going to do a little different show tonight. I am just sick to death of war, bad economy, TSA agents feeling us up at the airport, the impending doom of all of it. I'd like to focus on the world that I live in more today than, you know, than the rest of the world really cares about, specifically the New York sports world. Emphasize New York, see, with a Reed there. And why do I choose to do that today? Well, the main reason is that I couldn't get the guest I wanted to talk about all that other crap. So I had to come up with Plan B, as the Yankees are finding out about this week. So I figured that, yeah, this is a good time of the year to kind of take stock in things from a sports perspective. And using the somatic map as our guide, we will take a look at the way fan bases are being communicated to using different forms of media. Well, a lot of times in the show, we talk about the bias that media creates. The way it distorts information, the whole TMZ aspect of the culture, which is really what all that stuff I've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, the WikiLeaks people and all the other things. It's this bloodthirst for gossip and scoops and being first. And no greater example of that I can think of locally was the recent Cliff Lee sweepstakes here, won by the Phillies late Monday night, the mystery team, when we had dueling banjos going on Twitter trying to follow this thing. And it was wild, man. It was a wild scene. And it played itself out on morning radio a couple days ago when you have the two extremes of the sports media basically facing off. John Heyman from Sports Illustrated and Incarcerated Bob. from wherever in New Jersey. And they got on the Kabloom show here locally in the morning, Bloomer and Carton on FAN, and sequentially, they wouldn't deal with them, at the same time. That would cause worlds to collide. And long story short, it was pretty obvious that Bob had trumped Mr. Heyman on the story in the beginning of it. And then, of course, when this thing came out of left field with the Phillies, it was a little different deal. So let's take a little listen to Frustrated Bob the other day. He actually called Mike Francesa's show later that day, which was another story. But let's take a listen to this little clip.
I have two different people. Two different people. Here's the card.
Too goddamn loud, Carton. What's the matter with you? God. Always with the clips. Now what? Now I'm going over to YouTube here, apparently. Didn't want to go to YouTube. Computers are having a little... It's retrograde. I found out today we're Mercury retrograde, so they'll throw a little woo at you. Nothing will go right. All right, here we go. Let's see. Go back.
Now, I hear two different people.
Oh, I didn't know.
Two different people. Here's Incarcerated Bob now. Hey, Incarcerated Bob, what's up, buddy?
What it was? Man, you had Heyman on.
I asked him about you. Why are you chopping his fingers?
Nah.
And why are you talking to Heyman at a press conference down in Texas, Bobby?
Man,
what's that all about?
Basically Saturday, nobody, I mean, Heyman tweeted last week that the Phillies were done, that they weren't even involved.
Bobby, why do you get yourself all locked up in these things, man? Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, John Hill. Yeah, why do you think these people?
Man, I'm a troublemaker.
Yeah, but these are the titans of the industry, man.
But let me say something, man. He tried to make a joke, and I checked him, and then he apologized like a man. You know what I'm saying? He knew what time it was when I approached him with his little jokes that he tried to make.
He said, I can't believe Bob got all that info with this one phone call from the joint.
Yeah, well, he said, how'd you get that name? I said, Carton gave me the name, and you know what I'm saying? You're going to respect that. And he said, you know what? He was like, I didn't know you like that.
He started sounding a little bit.
He was like...
Well, Bobby, listen, we're all looking forward to Friday.
On the Cliff Lee thing, man. First of all, Cliff Lee, he went out like a sucker. He couldn't take New York. And, you know what I'm saying, he didn't want to be the man. So basically right now in New York, it is what it is. And Yankee fans, you know what I'm saying, even though we can't stand the Mets, we got to root for the Mets this year to put it on Cliff Lee.
Hey, of course, right, Bob, you want to know who the man in New York is right now?
The man in New York right now is Amari.
That's exactly right. That's how bad New York is right now. Amari.
That's right. For two reasons. One, he wasn't afraid of coming to New York in the bright lights. And two, he's delivered the goods when he got here.
It's without question, man.
All right, right? Another guy that always delivers the goods is Walt Frazier. And he'll be live in studio. A rare is...
All right, so there's that clip. All right, I think I found the minute and a half or so that Heyman was on talking about it. Let's see if that plays out right. So that's Incarcerated Bob from the Twitterverse. Is Heyman.
What's the deal with you and Incarcerated Bob? Free agency just ended.
I've already begun texting.
And what's the deal with you and Incarcerated Bob? I hear that you guys are chopping each other's fingers off or something.
You know, somebody kept telling me that there was a press... He was reporting that there's a press conference tomorrow with Texas. And I just questioned that. I kind of made a little joke on Twitter. Just said that would be unusual that he'd be able to throw out that much information, being only allowed one phone call. I mean, I
shouldn't be frustrated.
I didn't mean anything by it, but some people took it as I was ripping him. But that's his own name for himself. So
if you put it out there that Texas was having a press conference, you know, I got it wrong. Throwing some stuff up against the wall to see what sticks.
At that moment, I didn't know that. I thought he might be right. I did not know. I personally did not believe he wanted to go back to Texas. Everybody in Texas hates me because I didn't go on the bandwagon that he loved Texas. I didn't believe that. I thought that was a bunch of bunk. I did think the Yankees were the favorite before we knew exactly who the mystery team was. But yeah, I feel bad for incarcerated Bob. I think people took that as a rip on him, and I was just amazed that he was able to come up with that that one call.
He's gonna chop your fingers off, so be careful.
Well, we've got the door double bolted right now, so I'll be okay.
Johnny, good job, buddy. Appreciate
all right.
it.
Great talking to you guys.
John Hammond, everybody. There you go. Cliff Lee made it happen.
All right, so there you have it. The that's one example of a thousand of how these parallel universes of sports media are overlapping and in some some corners competing for the public eye. Where Incarcerated Bob, call him a clown, whatever you want to call him, he has developed a reputation as a guy that's breaking a lot of inside news. Now, one of those stories that he actually had the inside track on a couple of days ago that the mainstream media has just really tapped into tonight as we sit here, is this notion that Sal Alossi, the now exiled strength and conditioning coach of the New York Football Jets, was part of a kind of a plan to put a wall up on the sideline on Sunday during the Dolphin game to prevent the Gunners from the punt team of the Dolphins to run down there, and ended up with this whole Tripgate thing. So here's the latest on that animal from a mainstream media outlet on SNY this afternoon on Daily News Live. Come on. Oh, look at this. Look at this, you mush. You got to be kidding me.
We are getting the inside is falling just from the...
Go over there, will you? Everything is a freaking game. I watch these guys sometimes, and it's like,
more
how do they cope with it? Here we go.
Jets GM Mike Tannenbaum announced to reporters today that he found out new information on the Alossi incident. Tannenbaum revealing Alossi purposely lined up players on the sideline to try and block the Miami Gunners on special teams. Alossi has been now suspended indefinitely. Here's Tannenbaum from the conference call.
New information, and the players at the Miami game were instructed by Sal to stand where they were to force the Gunner in the game to run around them.
Hold on, breaking news in Pittsburgh.
Christensen and the offensive players for the Rangers have had a tough time finding room in this game, but in the third period, they're starting to find some. Now, granted, this is the power play, and Christensen uses his speed to get to the dock, and then just uses that great wrist shot. That goes off the crossbar and in. What a shot. But he's got speed and the quick wrist shot up high, crossbar down and in, and the power play goal gives the Rangers a 1-1 tie.
All right, back to Tripgate.
Based on that new information, we've suspended Sal indefinitely pending further review.
All right, Tannenbaum went on to say that Rex Ryan and the other coaches, Mike Westhoff as well, had nothing to do with this. You buying that?
Well, first of all, we have to believe that. That's right. We have to believe that he on his own decided to put together this little thing. And second to that, even if he did, there's nothing illegal about it until he actually reached out and tripped the guy. Steve Tasker talked about it and said it used to go on all the time. Coaches, players, they'd knock them out of bounds and be in the way to prevent them from getting momentum going down on kick coverage. You know, even if it did from the first, if they would have owned up to it at the beginning, we're going to have this controversy, except for the fact that he did trip him. That needed a penalty.
I just want to point this out, though. I think we all have to take Mike Tannenbaum at his word, but it does raise the issue, okay? Why are you bringing up bigger penalties now? Why are we having press conferences or conference calls? It makes it look like something more is going on, you know?
That's exactly it. I mean, why? As you said, there's nothing wrong with doing that, so why are they further suspending him? It makes you think that the coaches were involved in some way. I mean, that's only natural, and that they're doing this to make it kind of change the course here, way you're looking at it, you know? Something's going on. It doesn't make sense.
I think you have to look at the fact that, is this coming from the top or not? Everything else that's gone on off the field with this team has come from the top. This is the Rex Ryan Jets. This is what we've come to expect from this team, that there's one off-the-field controversy after another. They're the most hated team in the league. and they bring it upon themselves. It comes from the coach. So, you know, Tannenbaum can say all he wants about how Pelosi did it on his own. I don't buy that.
I don't buy it either. Does anybody really believe that he did A on his own and B that this is the first time he's actually done this? They must know about it. So even if they didn't encourage him to do it, if they had seen it before, they would have discouraged him from doing it.
Rex is standing, 5 feet away and watched that video.
Yeah, it's interesting. Makes you think. We will hear more on this from Manish Mehta, our Jets insider, later in the show. Our next tip.
All right, so there you go with Tripgate. It sort of speaks to the corporate phoniness of not only pro sports, but New York pro sports, because you almost can't state the obvious. Those guys were mainstream media guys picking around the bones of it. But obviously, this guy's a patsy. All right? And that's why they didn't fire him, because they don't want, in the real world, you'd have a very angry and disgruntled employee that says, hey, wait a minute. I was given orders to do this. Maybe they've gotten away with it in the past. You know, all this talk of gamesmanship in sports, what's fair, what's, you know, can you steal signs, can you steal signals? You know, can Jeter jump around like he's been hit in the hand when the ball hit the heel of the bat, you know? It's become, it used to just be called a game within a game, okay? But now sports is such high-stakes poker because it's prize football. It's prize baseball, all right? And when they say, anytime you see the word professional, put the word prize there. They're playing for a prize. They're not playing for the achievement. They're not playing for the competition. They're not even playing for history. Most of them are playing for a contract, not even for their own team. They're competing against everyone at their position in the entire league. So that, you know, as you saw with the Cliff Lee sweepstakes, when you get compared to other pitchers, you know, when you get compared to other sluggers, when you get compared to other quarterbacks, you'll get your big contract, right? So it's less and less about an affiliation with the team. It's more and more of a arbitration, if you will, between your performance as compared to your peers at the same position in whatever discipline you're in. That's the prize. Best actress every year, best actor every year, right? They compete the same way. And we got a break here at the Knick game. I think Gamari has gotten 50 points. This is wild, man. Close game, 96, looks like 96-94 Knicks, and Nick Ball with about 7 minutes and change to go. Ranger game is tied. We're going to monitor both those and simulcast them both. But I want to get through a couple more stories here. So we've covered incarcerated Bob versus John Heyman, which is sort of not even a fair fight, and this Tripgate thing. And then the next thing that's kind of cropped up this week is Carmelo Anthony. You know, the Nets made a trade a couple days ago. They're trying to put a deal together to obtain him. But, of course, he's stated in public and in private he'd just rather be a Knick. So there's an impasse there, and the Denver Nuggets are basically looking at a $65 million contract for him that he won't sign. So it's weird. When it comes down to it, these pieces, these chips, these stars, these blue-chip players, they're brands. They're little entities unto themselves. You saw the whole thing play out in a negative way with LeBron, and it's become sort of accepted behavior, because now that social media has become the media, and it's weird, mainstream media, and then if you get outside of cable news, you get to like local news, has become so slow and so stodgy because its bureaucracy is so thick, and it's so sort of mired down in its own BS, thinking that it's telling the truth, that it keeps getting sniped by this faster, more mobile social media that is much more dynamic, much more interactive, much more able to course correct its mistakes. Carson Abbott's a perfect example. He says, check my timeline. He's getting these things he gets are fluid. What mainstream media kind of waits around for is the one or the zero, where the social media operates in that partly cloudy, partly sunny universe, where it can change on a dime, and it's changed so many times. I mean, for the Cliff Lee thing, to go to the Phillies when everybody was just oscillating between Texas and the Yankees, Texas and the Yankees, Texas and the Yankees, all of a sudden it's the Phillies. Unbelievable, right? Now, if you're following it on Twitter, not so unbelievable, because by the time it made it to even things like Yahoo and Google News and things like that, it was bizarre. It was like it was 15, 20 minutes later. Oh, boy. Knicks just gave up a four-point lead down to 1 point now because they turned the ball over there. So inside of a minute and a half, the Knicks have gone from a comfortable lead to an uncomfortable lead. Culinary, yes. Nice. Fun. In the paint. What the heck was that? Fall-away jumper for Gallinari. Knicks by three with about, what's that say? About 6 minutes and change to go here. So we're going to dip into this game for the last couple of minutes. It's a close game. They're going back and forth. And then we'll dip into the Ranger game after that because that's got about 8 minutes to go, I think. See what's going on here if they've surrendered the tie yet. So, and again, these rivalry games are great because it plays out what I really want to get into tonight, which is the structure and the 2-1 Rangers. Whoa, what's going on here? Hang on a second.
The Rangers leading 2-1 and 6-10 to go in the third.
There you go. All right, thanks, Sam. Rangers are leading. This is a developing story here in Pittsburgh. The Rangers win a game in Pittsburgh again. I know this. We might all hurdle to the sun. You know, I mean, the Penguins are basically hockey gold with that new series. Penguins Capitals 24/7 premiering on HBO. I think tonight, actually. They're going to play in that New Year's Day thing, which is really cool. When they play, and they're going to play it at the Heinz Field in Pittsburgh on New Year's Day. You know, and again, to me, sports is really spectacle. Pro sports is really a prize pursuit. Prize fighting, right? They call it boxing, but it's prize fighting. All this stuff is about working for a prize. And again, the prize is individuated because the teams get rewarded, but the individuals are playing for contracts. They're playing for their own prosperity. It's really very simple. The trade in baskets like lightning here. This is wild. 4.5 minutes to go. So I wanted to get into that because, you know, when you look at these fan bases, especially when you look at fan bases in the off season, when it's like hot stove baseball and things like that, you see the underbelly, you see the fringe, you see the rawness of the extreme, you know, sort of quote-unquote big fan and how that fan is marketed to, how that fan is pursued relentlessly by the team for tickets and for, you know, the Mets had a Christmas party this week and they have a conference call, you know, with the bloggers last week with Sandy Alderson and the manager shows up on FAN today. It's a constant and relentless pursuit of your attention because they've got you. They've got you by the short hairs of your childhood. That deep trance identification I talk about once in a while. Sports has, it's so rich in metaphor. It's so rich in energy. We've talked about it. We've had Rick Leskowitz, whose new book, The Joy of Sox, is out now. A little stocking stuff. I mentioned it last time. You can pick that up. It talks about the way the culture relates to itself. Again, a sporting event is just like a concert. It's a performance. It's athletes performing rather than musicians, right? You know, same thing as a Broadway show. It's still entertainment. ESPN, the lead letter is E, baby. So it's got nothing to do with like sports as competition, you know? And that's what's missing in terms of the honesty here. Because underneath it all, you know what's lying behind it all.
You filthy criminals.
That's right. There's always a financial or monetary motivation when it comes to pro sports, and that is amped up to the hilt when you're dealing with New York pro sports. So, you know, you can get jaded about it and look at Brett Favre's streak the other day, and the second he announced he wasn't playing, up on the website goes, you know, signed footballs with 297 on them. You know, it's almost laughable at this point. The memorabilia business is amazingly fraught with you know, a lot of crooked characters. Autograph people and the Steiner sports people always involved in authenticating things. And, you know, here's some dirt from Yankee Stadium. Who cares, you know? But people collect this stuff. There's a whole cottage industry of people that aren't even sports fans. that are collecting little nuggets of things. You know, I still got tickets of when I went to the Super Bowl back in, what was it, 90, before that, it was 87, Super Bowl 21, Giants beating Dallas, Dallas, Giants beat Dallas, I can't play in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl's in Dallas this year, thank you, Brain. Okay. And, you know, you save that stuff because it has sentimental value, right? But the way the world works in terms of marketing is that it's much, much more about having, monetary value. It becomes something you can liquidate. It becomes something you can hold on to, and you can actually, you know, move it around like collecting art in a way. So people get into it from that angle. But when you look at these nine teams locally, I'm going to include the Devils, please, who win all the time, by the way. This year they're losing at an alarming rate. Oh, we've got an update from Pittsburgh.
Shot by Artemi Nikhimov. And it's 3-1 Rangers. And right from the faceoff, Nikhimov wins the draw.
This was a blast, man.
Rangers, he just finds him open ice. Or pardon me, Dubinsky wins the faceoff. Not Nikhimov. Dubinsky wins it, who's normally the winger. And Nikhimov takes the perfect pass. What a shot.
Wow. That was amazing. That was a wrist shot from probably just inside the blue, right at the top of the circle, right over the glove hand. Just like the other goal, actually, the one that tied it. So the Rangers have a 3-1 lead with, looks like, just under 5 to go in Pittsburgh. So they're going to get really desperate now. I guarantee in 2 seconds, damn Penguins have a power play here. Rangers are skating like the wind here, though. Really, they hate those Penguins. It was a little controversy a couple weeks ago when they beat us here at the Garden with Mr. Crosby, Mr. Cheater, kicking the skates out from one of our guys, and it's called sluicing. When they kick one skate into another to trip you, it's looked at as a real dirty bush move, and the Rangers commented about it. They really hate the Penguins. I mean, they've been crapping on us for as long as I can remember. And they always get calls, and they always get lucky goals, and they get incredibly, officiating is so biased in the NHL. But really, I commented about it the other day doing my fantasy physiology blog over on the site. The link's in the description for the show tonight. That they say the NFL is a quarterback league, right? But really, it's a referee league. Because you can watch, there's 16 games every weekend in the NFL, and depending on who the quarterbacks are, and who the referees are, you get a different officiated game. The nuances are so stark, it's maddening to watch, you know, some scrub quarterback from some second division team get mauled and nothing's called, and to watch, you know, like a Tom Brady or you know, a Peyton Manning. Oh, my God, we scored again! Oh, this is nuts, man. Right to the five hole. Wow, that was Boyle. I tell you what, the Rangers can shoot this year. I've seen this team over the years have a lot of talent, but they can never hit the damn cage. Just goes right through the wickets, right in the net. Wow. All right, let's jump back over to the Knicks here. 4-1 Rangers with less than 4 minutes to go in Pittsburgh. Those fans will be going home perplexed. I don't even think that the Penguins can get the refs to pull them out of this one. There's 3.5 minutes to go here. All right. Well, I'll check in for the last minute just to make sure. I guarantee they cut to 4-2 at least. So back to the Knicks game. Anyway, I was trying to make my point before, you know, that when you take the grand scheme of the direction this is going, as far as the way the connection between the teams and their fans and the way they market stuff, Knicks are up by 4 with a couple minutes to go. Okay. You sort of start to lose reality here for a second because the way that they've structured it, the way that they've made their mark in our minds, again, they're tapping into deep trance identification you made when you were a kid. Once you say, I'm a Met fan or I'm a Yankee fan, there's signatures, somatic signatures that go along with identifying with that team. Every team has its own little umwelt, its own little universe, its own little environment that it entrains into you. You know, there's a whole difference between singing Meet the Mets as a little kid and singing They Are the Yankees, da-da-da-dee-da-da-da. You know, it's a whole different mentality, right? And so when you look at these nine teams, like I said, I'm including the Devils in this this little vignette. Everything that goes on to promote those teams, to pull you into their fan experience, to pull you into their events, okay, has that agenda behind it. No different than the political ones we talk about and all the other ones from entertainment we talk about. So using the four domains as our guide, as I do here every week, looking at these teams, I kind of did it right before the show, nine teams, okay? Four of them are philo in the way that they market themselves, okay? And I'll give you some examples, all right? So the four philo teams in New York are the Rangers, we just put them on, the Hockey Rangers, the New Jersey Nets, the Jets, and the Islanders. Now look at those four teams. The Islanders won four cups a million years ago. The Nets, not much, all right, ever since Julius Erving left. The Jets, they got Joe Namath. And the Rangers, one cup in the last, I don't know, 70 years or whatever it's been, since 1940 they've won one cup. So what is that, 1940 to now is 70, oh my God, it is 70, sorry. One cup in 70 years. All right, so you have to bond with that team, not because it's about achievement and winning, but because it's the joy of bonding with that experience of being a fan of the team. Because when you think about it, you're part of the family, right? Now, the funny part is, the Mets are not included in that. The Mets have a whole different angle. Oh, rebound stuff. These Celtics will not go away. All right, we got 2 minutes to go. I'm going to go over the domains here in a minute. We got to go to the Garden for the finish of this. Big, big week for the Knicks. You know, and the Knicks are eco, by the way. I'll give you a hint, because you have to ride the emotions up and down to be a fan of this team, vis-a-vis Spike Lee. All right, so this might take about 20 minutes to get through the last 2 minutes of this lousy game here. But anyway, here we go. Knicks up by two with the ball. I see Spike standing up now. Going to direct the officials. Spike Lee. That is one sassy onto, man. I don't know what's going on. Checking the clock here. Their little cheesy porn mustache coach. I forget his name all the time. D'Agostino. I don't know. Stupid name. All right, here we go. What are you doing? Oh, you kidding? No way. That was a prayer. Look at that. Look out. Wow. So Stoudemire throws up a prayer, doesn't go, and Garnett misses a bunny. He tried to alley-oop it to him. He kind of caught it on the way down, and then missed the layup, and then basically snatches the rebound like a Velociraptor. So now he's at the line trying to tie it up here with a little more than a minute to go. Let's see if the Rangers have secured the victory here in Pittsburgh. Back to Pittsburgh.
Philadelphia and to the Rangers. Two division games. Big win for the Rangers. Now they now lead the league with 12 road wins.
All right, here you go. All right, so the Knicks are trying to see if they can follow up on the Rangers. They're Garden buddies, like they did on Sunday when the Knicks beat Carmelo Anthony and his Nuggets. And the Rangers followed up with a thrashing of the Russians and the Washington Capitals. Ovechkin, that bastard. Punk rattles them in. Okay, I think we're all tied up. Nick Ball, minute and 20 to go.
Falcon on the drive, gets inside, layup, no good. Robinson has to focus first.
Sons of bitches. This is why you hate the Celtics. See, I'm having deep trance identification as I speak to you. I just look at it like typical Knicks. See, when you root for an eco team like the Knicks and the Mets, both ecos, the highs are very temporary and the lows feel very permanent. You identify with the team more from the losses they inflict on you than the victories that you get because, again, not a lot of wins, not a lot of championships in the culture here. So the fan base is used to having its heart broken by the likes of the Celtics and the Lakers and whoever else comes in to clean our clock. I mean, Friday it'll be the Heat. And it's a very rare and precious exception when you get a breath of air and you actually get a ball to bounce in. Well, last week I think we did the game and the Knicks won it with 2 seconds left and it was invigorating. You thought definitely they'd lose. So now they've kicked around a four-point lead, and now they're down by three. So they got outscored 7-0 run, right? In the last minute and change? Typical. See? Because that's the experience. You go for the wave. You go for that ride that they're gonna overcome their obstacles. And you go through that. It's almost like dealing with a teenager learning how to drive. That's what it's like rooting for the Mets and the Knicks. And you're the marketing to them, again, meet the Mets. All that entrainment is much, much more about pulling you into a culture. The Knicks are much more the city game, and they have that legacy that the Nets don't have. The Nets have to bond with you interpersonally. They literally will introduce you to your own usher if you go to a Net game. They're so happy to see you. And they love operating under the radar, just like the Islanders do. The Rangers and the Jets, a little more high profile, and have a history to them. So, you know, it's about how old the team is, too. All right, here come the Knicks.
And now the Knicks have to play from behind. Gallinari on the drop.
Oh! And a foul! This guy's unbelievable! Gallinari just throwing the ball blind after the foul. Oh! You gotta be kidding me! A left-handed underhand scoop layup. And he's on the line to tie the game. He doesn't know who he's playing for. This guy's throwing in shots without even looking. Wow. It's the three. Ties the game. Celtics are confused. Just like the Penguins were a minute ago. 46 seconds to go, folks. Tie ball game at the Garden. Dr. Flippy, Soma Casting Live. Oh, it threw it away! Havlicek stole the ball! Here they come!
The Celtics choked us up? Come on, baby.
Oh, he did a Ewing. Oh, Stoudemire just pulled a Ewing. This guy's got about 50 points. And he misses about an 8-foot jumper in the lane. So now the Celtics are poised to just rip our lungs out here with 12.2 left. Otherwise, we've got to go to overtime. I mean, God damn it. Look at that. He kind of shoves him away. Look at this pass. Oh. Just, with that, back to the same deal. All you can hope for now is that they don't hit it at the buzzer, that they hit it with 3 or 4 seconds left, and it's not a three. Because I don't know how many times, even in the 90s when the Knicks were winning, the Bulls did it to us. You know, they would come down, I guess like a situation just like this, and if it was in Chicago, they're at the line. All Jordan would have to do is, I was talking about it before, about the National Football League being much more of a referee-nuanced league than a quarterback league. They focus on the quarterback, but the interpretation of the rules, same thing in baseball. What's a check swing for one pitcher is not going to be a check swing for another pitcher. It happens in hockey, too, with penalties. Because like I was just telling you before about the Penguins. And because it's prize pro sports, it's prize sports, there's so much money in the industry, not the wins and losses, in the league, in you know, making sure that the gamblers and the geeks and the fantasy players and all these other people that are glomming on it are all fed. That's why, you know, the referee scandal in the NBA a couple of years ago is still sort of a little scar. You know, the refs were, you know, sharing stuff, and then we had the stuff in the offseason with the Mets, with the clubhouse guys betting on football. It's a gambling, gossipy culture, and sports is sort of the big stew of it. So, here we have the Celtics-Tide games. This is the purity of it. Right now, all that stuff goes away. Right now, all that stuff is gone. Right now, you're in your high school gym, tie game, your arch rival's got the ball with 12.2 seconds left, and you got to stop them. I hope you get the overtime here. They just threw the ball away their last trip. These freaking old Celtic farts. All right. Here we go. Get up a little closer. This is my jinx move. Oh, wow. Boston's won 10 in a row. We've won 8 straight. I like the overtime idea there, Breen.
You either be in overtime or the game is over. One or the other. The Knicks did not get an opportunity here.
I remember Toby Knight stealing a ball once in this situation. Ten, nine, eight. Oh, I have a bad feeling. Fuck you! Son of a bitch hit it. And he does the airplane, the jet airplane, this son of a bitch. I mean, right in Omari's face. I hate him.
I had a party lined up. I was in the preseason.
Oh, my God.
With 8 of his 32 here on the court.
Right through.
Not bad defense by Amari.
Amari was, it was right in his face, really. He did a jab step. And stupid Celtic fell over.
So they do have plenty of time for a catch and shoot.
There's no chance. I mean, I never missed that shot. And in 30 freaking years, I'm watching this. Did you ever miss your lousy Celtics? Oh, line drives it right in. And our guys, you know, that would have tied the game if Amari hits his shot. Oh, I don't want to see the Celtics. They got Shaq O'Neal over here in a suit. A nightmare. Big deal. Oh, boy. 118-116. So from 113-09, it was, we got three, they got 9-3. It's the Knicks. All right, let's see what happens here. This is going
to
be a flailing, I don't understand this. Big deal. Such a horrible way to lose to these guys. But we play them this tough every time. We're doing okay. I'll tell you, we had Carmelo. That's another story. All right, here's the inevitable end, Soma fans. Yeah! He hit it! It's gone! The Knicks win! The Knicks win! Oh, my God, the Knicks win! Oh, my God! That's got to count! That's got to count! The guy just hit a three! Oh, my God! Oh, my God, it's late and we lose. Are you kidding me? Oh, that is a horrible way to lose a game. Look at this. Doc Rivers is saying no. I mean, son of a bitch. We're talking a click, man.
You know, can we get a hometown clock operator for once?
Yeah, the first one that we showed from behind saw the clock illuminated, and the field was going up for the shot. Stoudemire's been a good three-point shooter.
I mean, that's amazing. He hit that shot, and we're still going to lose to these bums. Can we ever win one of those? Oh, that's horrible. You know, you can, did that take 0.4 seconds or not? You got both teams standing here now. Oh, it's just going to be horrible. No good. No good. No, you're saying no. Game is over. Celtics win. I mean, son of a bitch. Oh, that's terrible. Oh, man. You gotta be kidding me.
And we talk all the time, there's no such thing as a moral victory in the NBA. But this shows that these things have some real toughness and grit to them. Yeah, it shows how far this team has come.
Oh, that's horrible.
Excruciating,
that's right, Clyde.
To be a hero in a couple of days against Miami. Our players in the game brought to you by Acelet. He's joined.
What do you have? 39 points. Actually, if I go back, incarcerated freaking Bob. If I go back an hour. Oh, this is hilarious. Check this out, Safes. Incarcerated Bob, the sage of the Twitterverse. I put him up here. He said, the Amari Magic number tonight is 42 points. If he gets 42 points, Knicks will win a game. That was 49 minutes ago. This son of a bitch, he ended up with 39 because of the buzzer. Oh, my God, incarcerated Bob was right again. Right again. Oh, how do you deal with this? How can I retweet that? Oh, that is just unbelievable. You know, this is a retweet, and this guy says I can't read. How can I not retweet that? Everything else I can retweet, I can't retweet this. I hate Twitter. Oh, the Twitterverse will explode now that the game's over. I mean, you're sick. You see, I went from the high of a couple minutes ago of the Rangers winning, because that's a bond, okay? I have a bond with the Rangers. I am a Ranger is one of their chants, you know? And you sit there, you identify, you're part of the Rangers, right? Net fans, the select few that there are, have the same sort of bond, but it's much, much more under the radar. Ranger fans are feverish. Jet fans, I mean, hard on your sleeve, and they're the Joe Beningos of the world. They actually are Met fans, too, but it's a bond. You take the Jets, and it's like it just goes right through you like a knife. The stuff that happened with the Patriots, the stuff that happened, last weekend with the Tripgate, it's almost like, you know, someone in the family just got accused of pedophilia. Oh, my God, Uncle Bob, you know. The Islanders, another will-be-gone franchise like the Mets, are so poorly run and so poorly marketed that they almost, at this point, are looking like an orphan. They had the Quebec Nordiques, who haven't had a franchise in about 15 years. Their fans, the Quebec Nordiques, a dead franchise, got 10,000 people into an Islander game the other day. It was 1,000 people, whatever it was. They came in and they were trying to buy them with the Islanders to bring them to Quebec. That's how sort of like, you know, amiss this ship is. Oh, God, I can't believe they lost that game. Oh, my God, that's horrible. That's the incarcerated Bob. Got to know with 0.4, not enough time to turn and shoot. That's incarcerated Bob's statement. The Knicks make you feel like they win even when they lose. Amari's the MVP so far. Look, if he had hit that last shot, he would have had 42 and a win. Yeah, that's what I said. Oh, my God. And the happy recap here. I know we're much earlier in the season than the Giants were, but this reminds me of the game the Giants lost to the Pats in Week 17, Momentum Builder. Did Breen just say the clock moved too fast? The game was played in the garden, right? It did move too fast! I'm talking a point tenth of a second! Damn it! That would have been in front of the paper! This guy hit a rainbow! I'll tell you what, Sotomayor's here. He's the man! How does that happen? Oh, I'm miserable now. And, you know, again, the Knick fan base is eco. So it ebbs and it flows and it ebbs and it flows. And it, oh, look, they're showing it again and again. How does this happen in the universe? I mean, literally, he's at the top of his jump and that stinking light comes on. If he has 0.5 seconds, we win the game. It didn't look like, I tell you what, live it didn't look like 0.4 seconds. Live it looked like it was instant. Caught it, shot it in. You're like, how did he get so, I'm thinking to myself, how did he get so open? Man. Oh, you heard it first, Soma fans. So, going around the horn here again, these nine teams. I told you about the Philo teams. All right? The two eco teams, the Mets and the Knicks, because it's an emotional roller coaster. They hardly ever win. They're prone to crushing your soul. They have that empathic, you just want to help them. They're that teenager learning how to drive experience. You just never quite feel, everything always feels like frustration and confusion are the only two things that circulate around those two fan bases. It never gets, it's always this peak, at very brief peaks and very, very, you know, kind of jagged valleys, right? Then you have the exo franchises, right? I'm not going to say the worst for last. The Giants and the Devils are the exo fan bases. The Devils, because they're dead. They're soulless. There's not a Devil fan I've ever met or even could conjure up that has any connection with the rest of the other eight teams in New York. They're on the flagship station for the Mets. They actually broadcast Devil games. And it's as if you're broadcasting, you know, a hockey game in the middle of Pennsylvania somewhere. And this team's won cups. This team's won, you know, they've been a perennial playoff team. This year they stink on ice. But they've been a very successful franchise for a long time. And the opposite of the Islanders haven't made the playoffs in a million years. They've done anything. But the difference is that the Islanders, as a fan base, as a community, are, like I said, they're sort of orphaned out there on the island. The Devils are sort of like raised by wolves. They're sort of just off by themselves. They don't exist. Their biggest thing, they have this nice arena, Prudential Arena. They've got this nice, their upper management is par excellence among the local teams. It's just nutty. And I don't know. Then you look at the Giants, who, like the Anto Yankee fan base, the Giant fan base, is also, you know, got a legacy, got a history, but it's very structured. The Giants are almost like Sterling Silver. They're excellent. They're excellent. Excellent. Fan base is completely crazed. But we like when we're tough. We like when the defense is good. We like when we run the ball. We're not a dynamic, flashy team. The Jets do that. That's their job. Now, the Jets are getting infiltrated, you know, over and over again now with a lot of eco signatures, so they're becoming a little more erratic as a franchise. But for the most part, they're the little Philo Jets. And what do they call them? Same old Jets. Very steady. You know, just like the other three Philo franchises, they don't much change their stripes, right? The Giants are a structure. They have this, you know, it's like a couple of things. It's like Notre Dame in a way. It's like it's very... You kind of their reputation precedes them. You know it's going to be about defense. It's going to be about running the ball. It's going to be about being very, very tough-minded. You know, they're stoic in a way, but there's an appeal to them. They persevere. The little engine that could kind of team. The Devils are like that too, but on a pastel scale. So you look at those fan bases. Then you got the one that's shoved down your throat every 5 seconds, which is the GD Yankees, right? And largely due to their ownership, they've dominated everything. They can't stop telling you how many championships they've won. They have T-shirts that are called the Yankee Universe. They don't mind being called the Evil Empire. And they just lost out on Cliff Lee. And they're pissed because they offered the most money and the most years. And Cliff Lee went, I'm going to Philly. So when you look at that fan base, and if you listen to New York Baseball Digest, specifically our friend Mr. Russo over there, Frank Russo, they have it in their head. This is something, again, it's part of that deep trance identification stuff. They have it in their heads. Yankee fans have it in their heads that it's their birthright. It is part of the natural order of nature, of the universe, for them to win all the time. Because it's tradition, as Frank says. I've never heard a White Sox fan or a Cubs fan, they're old teams, even the Phillies are old teams, who never did much winning in the last couple of years, you know, opine like that. Only Yankee fans. Yankee fans even say things like, baseball history is Yankee history. I mean, that's their confidence. That's their hubris. That's the way they are. And again, they have a very exo way of doing business, as you can see the way Cashman dealt with Jeter, right? They're cutthroat bastards. Oh, they exploited every star they ever had. Every star they ever had. They exploited them. They squeezed that nickel to the Buffalo, took a nice big dump. The Yankees. And it has that, like I said, that authoritative, you know, sort of just, I don't know, it's an overtone. And you get power from that. If you're a Yankee fan, you draw off that stuff. You know? A little style.
Anyway, as I was lying in the puddle, I think I may have found a way for us to get Bonds and Griffey, and we wouldn't have to give up that much.
Well, don't tell it to me, George. Tell it to the new assistant of the general manager.
I didn't get the job.
Well, once you were dead, we couldn't just sit on our hands. We got to make a move. But you still have your old job. Of course, we'll have to dock you for the time you missed. We're running a ball club here. If I give special treatment to you, everyone will want it. Next thing you know, it's chaos. And I can tell you this, chaos does not work for the New York Yankees. Not as long as I'm running the show.
Happy Recap chimes in on Twitter. Knicks need to hire the dude who was in charge of the clock during the climactic game in Teen Wolf. There you go. A little reference there. So, again, when you look at these nine franchises, the reason why the Yankees stick out as probably the most dominant and the most prominent fan base is because they give the everyday guy who's sitting in traffic, who's mired down by living in New York, who's got all that stuff going on, a little of their juice, a little of their mojo, a little of their power. And it makes them get beer muscles sometimes. It makes them do a lot of stupid things. But that's the Yankee way. The Yankee way is to inflate. You look at the stadium. Everything is about that regalness. You know, really, they think they are the king. Where the Mets, court gestures. They have a Mr. Met. They joke around. They know that they're never going to be that. They're never going to be like Big Brother. So they take the mindset of being the little disruptive teenage, kind of a kid that rebels, that does things in a more emotional way, that talks about miracles and has a whole different ethos to it. So you bond with that. When the fan experience at the two stadiums are so stark as the stadiums themselves are, right? Where it's funny because the Yankees are preaching along that onto-exo axis, the Mets preach along that philo-eco axis, where it's like, come on, be part of us, meet the Mets. And when you're at that experience at a Met game, it's amazing. It's like a drug. And so it's almost like it envelops you in a very, almost like being at an outdoor concert and the ganja is high, you know. That's what the Met fan experience is like. Well, the Yankee experience, when they lose, man, it's like a funeral over there. The Met fans go crazy. They scream and yell. The Yankee fans go quiet. That's the big difference, you know. And same with Jet fans versus Giant fans. Giant fans, again, their fan base has a much more onto vibe to it, even though it's an exo franchise. We feel almost violated when they don't win. Now, they don't win all the time, and they for decades they didn't win at all. So as a Giant fan, you just got used to sort of taking it. And you had that kind of, like I said, you as a Giant fan, you just feel nothing comes easy. Everything is a struggle. Everything is a is like it can be taken away at any moment. But you don't have the same, sort of preset or sort of expectation of failure that you do when you're rooting for the Knicks or the Mets. With the Giants, failure is always it's like a loss. It's like a death. It takes it out of you. It's final. It's like with the Yankees lose. You're like, oh, they're out. They're done, and it empties you. You know, with the Mets, it's much, much more of an of course. With the Giants, it's, oh, shit. You know, it's like, I'm already over the Nick loss. What's it been, 5 minutes? They played well. Amari is draining these things. The guy scored 39 points tonight. That's 9 straight games. He's scoring over 30. We got the Heat coming in here on Friday. We got LeBron. We're going to kick his butt. And we would have taken 2 out of 3 from Denver, the Celtics, and LeBron. And the only 2 games they've lost in the last 12 games, really, or wherever it's been, was a buzzer beater in Denver and a buzzer beater here. You know? Just wish Pierce had missed one of those once. SOB. So there's your 9 teams. It's like I said, so when you want to go and look at the sports page now, look at the way they're covered. Look at the way that the mainstream media and the way that the social media interacts about these teams. With the Jets and with the Mets, and to a certain degree with the Nets, it's all about rumor. Look at the way LeBron was covered as a Knicks fan, you know, set up for the fall. Set up for the fall, set up to be, you know, fall right on your nose, to be told for 2 years you're going to get him, and then he sits there and goes to the freaking Heat. We get him. We got the biggest prize of all. We got Stoudemire, who wanted to be here. The Mets. You know, of course they can't get. They have to put up with the Phillies getting all these pitchers. They have to put up with the Yankees, winning a World Championship and always getting the best in it. So the only glee for the Met fan is that the Yankees don't get Cliff Lee, right? And we get Terry freaking Collins, who I'm pissed about. We can't get Wally. No, we have to. We're the teenager that can't get the family car for the weekend. We never get the cheerleader. We get the cheerleader's friend. You know, that's the way it's wired. Ranger fans, again, your scar tissue, 1 championship in 70 years. The Nets, a very ABA sort of rebel identity underneath, a very neighborhood kind of bond, because if you go to a Net game, like I said, they will literally give you an opportunity to take foul shots if you want to. And the Islanders, again, kind of a broken legacy in a way. When they were winning in the early 80s, and they were a perennial contender, they were like what I would call a junkyard philo, bark bigger than their bite. And once they started losing and once they started to become irrelevant again and they couldn't compete with the Ranger fan base anymore, 2 philo fan bases, very strange, a lot of fights in the stands, they became almost like the post-traumatic stress disorder child. You know, they lost their ability to have a culture. And even they brought back a lot of these guys, from the championship years. Their arena was irrelevant. Their everything about them, they couldn't attract free agents. You know, ridiculous contracts, hiring and firing general managers, getting stuck with a guy like what's his name there from the Bruins there all those years. I want to say Holmgren, but that's not his name. That's his name. Little beady-eyed bastard. I don't know who'll come to me. He was there forever anyway. It starts with an M. What the hell's his name? Mike, the hell's his name? It's going to bug me now. I have it. Mike something. All right, I'm going to find it. This is what I get obsessed with. Rat bastards. All right, let's see. New York Islanders. Oops. Oh, I almost had it in my head. Islanders. No, not Bossy. Not Bossy. Milbury, the son of a bitch. Yeah. He was there. There's 5 reasons the former GM is the worst in the history of the league. All right, here's 5 reasons. I'll just give you that. He was terrible, and he's still, he, and then they got Garth Snow, and it was the goalie, and they made him the GM. It's sad. You know, but it is a guy, an old Bruin, took over the team. It's laughable. Let's see. Okay. He made some funny trades. Traded Kevin Weeks and a second round selection for a whole bunch of other people here. Ryan Caldwell. Okay. Yeah, whatever. He was the worst GM in the history of the world. But my point about these guys was that once you understand the way those fan bases are wired, once you understand the way those teams market themselves, then you get into the media coverage and how it's been changing and how you've seen the transition to being much more quick and less about being accurate and deep, because your connection to the team is perpetual. Where it used to be, you couldn't watch a home game on TV. You didn't see the home games of the Giants and Jets and for the most part, the Rangers and the Knicks. You only saw road games, sometimes on tape delay at 10:30 at night. So there wasn't the 24/7 sports cycle. You relied on the mainstream media for your connection to these. I remember sitting reading the Newsday, reading about my team, and that was it. It's all I got. It was a little blurb in the newspaper. Now you've got perpetual coverage of these teams, so you can't go as deep into the trance. So you can have a very loose and a very open source connection to your team, and that's why I think they've become more pastel and more archetypal in the way they're marketed, and as a result, on a mimetic level, they become more pervasive because they can really infect your mind from a variety of different venues, a lot of different angles throughout the day. And the sports talk media has done a good job of that. So let me get to Mr. Blitz here. I sent a little inquiry over to Bob Mance from bobsblitz.com. He's a sports blogger from around here of great renowned. And he sent me back this message here before the show about the changing tides in media and really what it means to when you think about these local sports teams and how they're connected to it, their fan bases. So here you go. First, the cough. Yeah, gotta have a cough after a nickname like that because they choked it up. I can't blame him. Oh my God, 0.4 seconds. Anyway, here's what Bob says. Social media has become the way to go as far as being first to a story and also a great way for teams, writers, et cetera, to interact with fans. Can anyone claim to have beaten Fox's Jay Glazer to a story when the tweet is sitting out there? No. He can tweet the breaking headline, and while ESPN, more of a mainstream player at this point, is just getting around to stealing that on their ticker. Glazer has an article out, which is also linked on Twitter. SI is John Heyman, talked about him before, is another guy who's really good at social media marketing. Very often interact with his followers. The good news is Bob Raceman, who's a media critic, takes the opposite approach. He tries to move his agenda forward. His ratio of tweets to replies is sorry, and that's why we don't follow him on Twitter. See, it has to be a two-way conversation in order for it to be social. You can't just broadcast and pump your brand and thump your chest out there. Then he gets into some of the general the league stuff. The NBA does the best job of marketing itself via YouTube. They have highlights up that are embeddable. We're not huge NBA fans over at Bob's Blitz, but a good video is a good video, so it winds up making the rounds. Major League Baseball still doesn't get that. The NFL is the most interesting of the lot, not the greatest tube presence, but more and more they allow fans to post copyrighted material without screaming. A couple weeks ago, they got over 300,000 hits on the Andre Johnson fight over a three-day period of time. They had pulled the guy's video, we would have pulled the post. They did it, and we didn't. Eventually, all the mainstream media, most of the teams, will have someone who ran a blog working for them, because we're now going to that second generation where now it's not an alternative media, it actually is the lead dog helping to get the message out. Again, deep trance identification, but this is digital trance identification. The more eyeballs they get entrained watching those logos, watching them buying their material, engaging in their chat rooms, you're immersed. But again, because of the omnipresence of it, You're tangentially influenced. You're not going to get the deep and the much more somatic identification of bonding with a team like I did growing up in the 70s when you had to actually go to a game to see a home game and see your team. You couldn't see it on TV. Or maybe once a week you got to see a game on TV, the home games. I grew up listening to the radio for the most part, the Rangers. Marv Albert got me through I don't know how many playoff games. With the Giants, it was Jim Gordon, calling the games, and you would be careening off the road, driving back from church or whatever. So anyway, he cites Mike Silva's site as an example of the way mainstream media would actually model that. They'd hire a guy like Mike Silva that knows how to do that and communicate directly to the fans and get the message out in a very tactful way, and that isn't hyperbole, but it's much more of a sort of a constant, where it's not just analysis of a game, it's criticism of the team, and it's a view of how the team's perceived publicly. All that stuff has to happen on a digital format where it can't happen more out here than the analog world. Sites like the Big Lead, they got sold because their Twitter presence is nonstop and interactive. So the key, as Bob's talking about, is that the conversation between the team, the fans, and the media, that triangle in New York, unlike other areas, because there's a bias. People say if a player like Cliff Lee doesn't come here, rejects the Yankees, or a player fails here, right? Oh, he couldn't cut it in New York. Why? What is so, different about this market as opposed to others? And he just hit the nail on the head. You take all the platforms that are out there, you take all of the tools that are out there to communicate, and you multiply that by millions of people concentrated here who are invested in those teams along those signatures of those somatic orientations that we're discussing. And again, four of the nine bond with you as a part of their family. I am a Ranger. And when I say that, I am a Ranger. All right? Jet fans, same thing. They do their J-E-T-S, Jets, or whether they do their same old Jets. It's either extreme. It's part of you. So I want to see if I can find the ultimate Joe Beningo rant from last year. And, I put Joe's book up there as the tag on this week's show. Let's see. It was a hilarious rant. When they thought the Jets were going to be out of the playoffs last year when he came on. Oh, boy. This is 12-12, opening part two, is this it? Looks like that's it. Let's see. Oh, here's the opening part one. He really loses his mind over this team. If this is it. This is last year. Yeah, and this idea of ranting has become part of the sports culture around here. Just want to see if this is the one when they think they're out of the playoffs and it comes on.
Monday afternoon to you, but Benigno Roberts filling in once again for Mike Francesa, 877.
I think this is the one.
5666. There's Bolton on the town. You're right, moving about 620 or so. The smoother Stevie Summers will come your way. Calipata has record value on the other side of the glass. Bro, I am just totally...
This is from last year.
There's no way to say. If you want me to come on here today and just go nuts, I'm nuts now. I really am.
How could you be nuts that this game didn't just slap you in the face like 5,000 times?
I am so disgusted, number one, with myself for being a fan of this disgusting franchise.
Here we go.
For now 45 years. I'm disgusted with myself for that, number one. I am so sick and tired of watching this team every year. It just doesn't change. I know I sound like a broken record. I know I do. But, I mean, this game that we saw yesterday, how many times have we seen this game? How many times have we seen this football team, with everything to play for,
against a team that is playing for nothing, that was eliminated the night before from making the playoffs, come out and just, you know what, the bet. And everybody gets blamed for this disgrace yesterday. The quarterback stunk. The offense couldn't run the ball. I thought the play calling at times by Schottenheimer, I've had enough of him, it's time for him to go, was terrible. You can't even get a field goal off. Kellen Clemens, who should be cut, I've had enough of him, can't even hold on to a snap. Philly misses a field goal all year. The guy's money, misses a huge field goal. Then Dirth with a bad snap again. The kick gets blocked. And then the thing that maybe gets me the most aggravated, bro, and forget the fact that they dropped about 4 interceptions yesterday, but the thing that gets me more aggravated than anything is this great defense with all these dumb statistics. They're number one in this, and they're number one in that, and they're number one in this. I'll tell you what they're number one in. Blowing games, because this is the third time this year that this great, great, great defense blows it, chokes with the game on the line. How many times? They did it against Miami. They did it against the Jaguars. They did it yesterday. Tony Gonzalez, everybody and their brother knows they're throwing the ball to the guy. Everybody. They shut him down all day. All day. They got Kerry Rhodes on single coverage all day. And then the fat coach switches the defense. What are you doing? What are you doing, Rex? And then to make it worse, he goes and says, and I know the season's over. Look, I know it. Evan knows it. Every Jet fan, every guy yesterday, and I feel bad for all my fellow Jet fans that were at that disaster yesterday. My buddy Ox, my buddy Tommy Keenan, you know, Mikey Saul, right on down the line, that had to sit through that disgrace of a football game yesterday. And then the fat coach says the year's over. It's over. Well, it isn't over. Because Miami lost, the Broncos lost, and I know, and everybody knows they got no shot against the Colts next week. No shot. None. I don't care who's playing quarterback. Curtis Painter or whoever. I don't care. Bonnie Pointer. It doesn't matter. They got no shot against the Colts, and I am disgusted with this franchise. 45 years I've been a fan, and it's the same nonsense all the time. All the time. I mean, I can't take it. I can't take anymore. I can't take it. I am the biggest you-know-what in the world. I really am, bro. I am the biggest.
No,
I am.
No.
You haven't gone through it long enough yet.
No, but you're not
the
biggest.
This is the same crap every year. Every damn year. And I knew they weren't making the playoffs this year. But how do you lose to this team? They couldn't do anything yesterday. I just can't take anymore, bro. You can go ahead. Say whatever.
Well, first of all,
I'm ready to get out of here because I can't take it anymore. I'm numb.
You're not going anywhere.
And there's a lot of words I wish I could say, but it's a family show. I can't say it. But you know what I'm saying. And it starts all the way down from Rex, all the way down. Every guy on that team yesterday deserves it. Because you all suck. Every one of you. Every one of you.
Okay.
The biggest jerk in the world.
Trying to get my point across of what it's like to be an eco rooting for a Philo franchise that breaks your heart. And Joe, that was from last year. They won that game against the Colts, and they won the next game against the Bengals, and they won the playoff game against the Bengals, and they won the playoff game after that against the Chargers, and then they lost the AFC Championship game to the Colts. But he went from that valley to a very brief and shiny peak, and then down the mountain he came in the second half of the AFC Championship game. And then the Jets have just done it to them again. 9-2 start, and then they get shamed by the Patriots, just like the Knicks with the Celtics. So, you know, team that wins all the time. And they lost on Sunday with the whole Tripgate thing. So there's a little taste of what it's like, New York sports media, as we cross over between the mainstream and the social media, kind of crisscrossing at this point, playing off each other more than any, kind of like transitioning, really, as we go forward. So looking at it, you know, from a standpoint of the somatic
application of this is that you almost can, like I said, you look at these teams as portals into those worldviews. If you want an eco-ness to your day, watch a Knick game or a Met game, right? If you want to feel really empowered and feel invincible, put on a little Yankeeography or a Yankee classic. You'll feel like you're omnipotent in 5 minutes. If you want that philo touch, you want to feel that comfort food, you're back with your Jets, you're back with your Rangers, you're back with your Nets, or you're back with your Islanders, the Orphans franchises. And then if you really want to feel sort of that, not so much the omnipotence and the invincibility, but if you want to feel that that almost like that timelessness kind of a factor, you know, you feel like you're just, it's almost like never aging. Giants and Devils have that quality to them. And even though, like I said, they have a tendency to kind of, because they're so structured and they're so organized and they're so buttoned up as organizations, you can't get a peep out of them. They're very, you know, they're clean, they're mature, there's not a lot of drama around those teams, and when there is, it's cleaned up very quickly. You know, the Plexico Burris thing was zip, you know, and they have a contract disputed, zip. It's not like the Revis thing where it's our Hard Knocks and it's all over the place. You know, and again, the Jets are getting more eco as we go with their leadership, like with their philo and their fan base. The Giants and Devils fan bases, they shine out a little bit on the Anto side, and they make you feel strong, but not necessarily invincible. They make you feel solid, but not necessarily impervious. You still have a very, it's like the difference between swimming in a pool and swimming in the ocean, okay? You know, the Giants and Devil put you in a pool. There's a structure to it. There's a ladder. There's a towel. There's a diving board. The whole thing. You know, the Mets and the Knicks, they throw you right in the middle of the damn ocean. They say, have a nice time. You know, it's much, much more like surfing than it is like swimming when you root for those teams. You're just constantly in those waves. So that's what I wanted to get across. And you know, from what Bob said on Bob's Blitz, you can go check it out on bobsblitz.com, is that what's happening is the communication of these messages is becoming much more turbulent, becoming much more on a social media type of a vernacular. So the mainstream media is now forcing itself, they're not very welcome, because you look at what's going on at FAN, you know, there's still the same stodgy old structure, the same sort of isolation view, and then you get some personalities in there that are a little younger, like an Evan Roberts that understands this stuff. The more that element comes in, the more that station is going to become much more fluid and much more kind of interchangeable between social media and mainstream media. I just don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon, because you have Francesa and Exo in the afternoon. Boomer and Carton is an Anto Philo pairing in the morning, so that's like watching an old married couple. And then you have the Eco and the Philo, Joe and Evan here in the middays, dealing with their emotional connections to these teams. Now, that wouldn't play in any other market. You look at any other sports market around the country, and it's much, much more Anto-based. It's much, much more in-your-face. It's much, much more of a pissing contest, of a yelling contest, of a confrontational, like I have on SNY with loudmouth. It's much more of a screaming match, where on FAN you have kind of isolated environments that communicate messages in such a way that it's not even about being accurate. It's about being consistent in your miscommunication. You know, Francesa never admits a mistake, no matter what evidence presents itself. He never backtracks. His standard statement is, I never said that. You know, we had Mia Harris on the air back in the spring with Mike Silva here, fresh from leaving FAN, talking about how Chernoff never gave her a chance to be a host. There's an infrastructure there that's so archaic, so backwards, so mismanaged, but they don't care because, again, just like the sports they cover, it's prize radio. So as long as you're getting your sponsorship, as long as you're selling your ads, as long as you're getting your so-called ratings, the quality of the product is irrelevant. Winning is irrelevant. It's much, much more about being a success, which is much more about the business side. And that's the part that I'm saying that in New York, that's the ultimate thing. If you can just interchange in your mind when you watch a game or read about a team or a bond with a team, it's no different than when you download MP3s of an album of a musician you like, or whether you watch YouTube clips of a performer on the web. you're still getting fed the same message, whether you're a Springsteen fan or whether you're a Met fan. All right? They're trying to give you an experience that they make portable. They hook into you. You have a deep trance identification with it, and then they market to you. That's the reality of it. That's what Rush Cross has been talking about. I talk about it from a standpoint of the biology of it, that these are temetic machines. These franchises here are technical meme houses. They hold ideas that hook your mind. And as long as you understand it's entertainment and it doesn't replace experience, it only superficially enhances it temporarily, then it can be a game. Otherwise, it could become like it does with Joe and sometimes with me, life or death. It could control your nervous system. It could control a lot of things. And that's what I'm saying. It starts to influence you to the point where it becomes, it can divide you from the world. People get lost in it. So that's what I wanted to talk about tonight with this stuff, is that as you look out at the world, the big world out there, and you start seeing all the problems and all the things that seem insurmountable, and then you go to the small end of the funnel at your world, and you start seeing the same patterns, only on a smaller scale, insurmountable obstacles. Sports was supposed to be there as an escape, not as a duplication of the process. That's what's missing. The escape part of sports is over with, and the entertainment part of sports and the marketing of that, as they call it, the fan experience, is, you know, they're actually, at this point, they're actually flip-flopping it, where they're bringing a lot of the elements of watching a game at home to the stadium, where they'll put the, they'll put the red zone on at a game. So you're at a game watching other games like you would be in your living room, only you're sitting outside the stadium. It's very strange. So I think I'm going to sew it up for that and play out and get us ready for our little Christmas show next week. And I think this is fun. We'll do this. This is wild. Well, Billy Joel here to play us out here on a Wednesday night, Onto a Week. Get away. Take a holiday from the neighborhood. Have a flight to Miami Beach. I want to thank Bob Splitz for contributing to the show, bobsplitz.com. So check me out at somaspace.org. And we're going to be getting into some holiday spirit next week as we get into the winter solstice, which is next Tuesday, and talking about how the holidays influence our behavior and getting into a little retrospective on the first half of 2010, looking at the guests, looking at what we did this year. Kind of a reflective show next week, and the week after, too, we'll look at the second half of the year and get ready for New Year's. So any questions, any comments, you can reach me over at nakedsoma@gmail.com, or you can always go to the site, somaspace.org. I'm Dr. Mark. Thanks for joining me, and thanks for this time in your space. Be yourself, and be well, and always travel light through the darkness. Go Giants!
It was so easy living day by day. I'm touched with the rhythm and blues, but now I need a little give and take. New York Times, very new. It's fine with me cause I'm in a sign. Don't care if it's Chinatown or the Riverside. Now I don't have any reasons that they're far behind. Just in a New York state of mind.
Fire on, Sapiens.